The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Good morning, everybody. Oil is at a seventh-month high. Overnight, West Texas Intermediate crude hit $48.58 a barrel, its highest level since October. And we wondered why, because we thought that oil might start to recover. But you might remember not long ago, Goldman Sachs said it was going down to $10 a barrel. Now they've kind of changed their mind, I understand, from a headline I wrote this morning. But as Peggy said, we just thought we would talk to an expert, Mr. Stephen Shork. He has something called the Shork Report, which is well-read by the industry. This is a report that anybody in the energy industry must, it's a must-read for them, knowing what's going on with energy cycles. So, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And I understand, in fact, you're down here to give a speech to the industry. So thank you for taking a little time to being with us today.
Appreciate that.
All right. Now, we were having this great conversation. This happens a lot around here, is that we have really good conversations with our guests, sometimes before, sometimes during the breaks. So we have this great conversation. And frankly, Stephen, I was going to start off by asking you what you thought about this rally in oil, but I think you already gave me the answer, but now I guess you need to share that with the folks out there.
Absolutely. I am supremely skeptical of this rally and of having any significant legs. It's a situation where momentum and higher prices are now becoming the excuse for even higher prices, but it's not fundamentally underpinned right now. We seem to be focused on the pullback in U.S. production, while it is significant. By the end of this year, U.S. oil production will be below 8.4 million barrels a day, which is 1.2 million barrels a day below the peak, which we saw last year. But lost in this is the fact that Canadian production is going to remain stout, and any barrels that we lose with U.S. production will be replaced by cheap, even cheaper Canadian barrels at that point.
Now, did the fire in Canada impact it at all last year?
That is certainly a part of it, and that perhaps was why Goldman kind of changed their tune. A Canadian oil report that came out a few days ago said that you'll have, through the second quarter, 500,000 barrels a day of production that has been lost. And we will not see full production up, and this is worst-case scenario, will come up in the third quarter. Now, guys, think about this. Certainly, it is underpinning support for the market in the second quarter as we go into the summer. But once that Canadian production comes back full scale, when is it coming back full scale? In the third quarter. What happens in the third quarter? Well, we're beginning ebbing into the September turnaround season, so driving demand will begin to fall off, refinery demand will begin to fall off at the time when Canadian oil will start flowing into the market. So I do not deny it is a short-term factor, but it's transitory. And that seems to be what this rally in oil has been all built upon, is transitory headlines. The Doha meeting, okay, was supposed to be the catalyst.
Yeah, big deal, Ryan.
Exactly. So when we look at the producer, what is the producer worldwide doing? Well, if we look at the futures position being held by producers in the ICE Brent crude oil market, and the Brent crude oil market is a bellwether for global oil prices, the producer has set 10 consecutive records of being short the Brent contract. In fact, the producer has sold so much oil forward now in the Brent market, it could surpass 9 days' worth of the cumulative production of the 16 countries that attended Doha.
Wow.
So the producer does not have any faith in this, and they are indeed locking in prices. So my rationale is, if the producer is willing to sell you $46, $47, $50 oil all the way out through 2018, why do you want to owe it at this level?
Well, that's a good point. Can we trust one of the questions I want to ask you, because while we're talking about all these statistics, can we really trust the statistics we've been given? And where I'm coming from on this, a couple of months ago, we had a local economist from Houston here in studio. And during the break, I asked him what he thought about energy. And he came back, and one of the comments he said, what's amazing to me is that, you know, I read what the IEA says, and then what Texas produces, and then we've got the Texas Railroad Commission, as you know, which is faced with the responsibility of really know what Texas produces. And he says there's half a million barrels difference between what the IEA is saying and what Texas is actually producing. And it's on the high side, meaning that the IEA is saying Texas is actually producing more oil than we really are. Could that be true?
Absolutely. And this goes into the fallacy of looking at today's Wednesday. So in about an hour, hour and a half, we're going to get the DOE numbers for the estimates on the weekly petroleum numbers. And those reports tend to move the market significantly. Now, when you sit there and said, okay, the Bureau of Labor Statistics cannot count how many people are unemployed in this country on a monthly basis, because you see egregious corrections and revisions 1-2 months hence. So if we can't even count how many people are employed, not employed, how are we ever on a weekly basis, as something as intricate as the petroleum market, where oil's coming in, oil's going out, oil's being consumed, oil's being turned into other products, and you're doing this in five different regions, how are you ever going to estimate that on a weekly basis? And the answer is, you are not. It is a fool's errand, but you have to respect the market. The market, for some reason, puts a lot of focus on these weekly reports, even these monthly reports. So this is something you have to just deal with. So what we do at Shork is we're more believers in seasonal statistical analysis and looking at the trends and factoring, okay, which factors are going in. For instance, today's number, we know it's going to be heavily skewed because of the Canadian wildfires.
Right.
So we do know that's going to have a massive effect. Now, is it going to be a long-lasting effect? Because obviously there's always been price shocks or supply shocks, demand shocks to the market. So you have to wait this event to see how it has responded to other events. And then you create a story. You create a trend. You create the seasonality into this. And then you gauge, okay, last week the inventory report fell off by 3 or 4 million barrels a day. The market was expecting a 3 million barrel build. But you know what? You know what the market is? The market is 20 analysts. Some think we were going to get a 2, 3, 4 million barrel build last week. Some thought we were going to get a 2, 3, 4 million barrel draw. The slight majority were thinking build. So the market, quote unquote, was thinking build. That's just a 1 week, that's just a guess. Now, was that pullback, was it statistically significant for this time of the year? And a 3 or 4 million barrel drawdown, which is what we saw, is noise. It works right into the normal seasonality of it. So if you're looking for this as a price signal saying, oh my God, oil prices are falling, first you have to ask yourself, are they supposed to be falling this time of the year, or are they supposed to be building this time of the year? And we're right on the cusp where refineries are starting to ramp up. Oil prices normally should start to fall, not necessarily a bullish signal.
Okay, so you really think there's really something going on with the bears and the bulls? They're just kind of playing with the market right now.
Absolutely. I think this is more of a short squeeze than anything else. That is your primary driver for price
right
now.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. Back to you in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, we're talking oil this morning with Stephen Shork of the Shork Report. They do fundamental and technical analysis of the energy markets. I tell you what, little commercial now. How do they get a hold of you? How do they subscribe to the report?
Actually, the easiest way is just to Google Shork, S-C-H-O-R-K. It is the Shork Report and energymarketintelligence.com.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at this report. It's amazing. And you do this. How often do you produce these reports?
We produce approximately every day the New York Mercantile Exchange oil market is open. So approximately 20 issues a month.
You do this every day?
Every day.
Yeah, this is a lot of work.
It is labor intensive, but
holy cow.
But it's one of these things where if you love what you do, it's not work. So
okay. I'm glad you love what you do, because folks, I'm looking at one of these reports. This thing would be hard for me to do in a month, maybe a year. I could do this annually. So it's called the Shork Report, S-C-H-O-R-K. I wish we could record our breaks
because it's just great information.
All right, so just before we had the break, you were talking about this being a short squeeze. And
yes.
Is this really a bunch of rich folks just kind of playing around with this whole market?
Well, And let's define for your listeners a short squeeze, and that is simply people who have sold the contracts. So you can either buy the contract or go short the contract, and just as long as you liquidate and take the opposite position before the contract expires, you are flat. So when we look at where the market was back in February, you had the largest short position, people, speculators who have sold the market, thinking,
right.
And this is when oil
assuming it's going down.
Yeah, or, and this was
when making the bet that it's going down.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're selling at 30, expecting to buy it back at 20.
Right.
And so oil was below $30 a barrel, and there were expectations, myself included, that oil could break that psychological $20 barrier.
Yeah, Goldman was on that track, I remember.
Goldman was on the track, and a number of banks were on the track. And so what have we seen since February? We've seen one heck of a rally, okay? So what's underpinned the rally? Well, on the speculator side, when you look at the CFTC data, you have longs, you have shorts. Okay. So back in February, shorts were at a record high. So who's been buying this market? Well, first and foremost, if we look at the speculator, the guys who were long back in February, their position has increased by about 25 million contracts. Okay, sounds good. But then if you look at the short position, they've liquidated 200 million contracts. Okay.
Wow.
So when you liquidate a short position, what are you doing? You're buying the market. So you have a situation where the bullish speculator and the bearish speculator, the bear is outbuying the bull by a margin of, in some weeks, 6-1, 7-1, 8-1. So when the bear is buying that many more contracts than the bull, that's telling me that the bears are just getting stopped out. The bulls don't believe in this because they're not buying into this. And your best telltale is to look at open interest in the market. Mm-hmm. Open interest tells you the amount of money flowing in, flowing out. If this was really a fundamentally driven market, when prices rise, you would expect open interest to rise. More money coming in, fueling
right.
that buying. And it's go back to your ninth grade algebra, plus, positive price action, positive open interest, multiply them, you get positive action, money coming in. What we have now is positive price action, negative open interest, a positive against the negative
wow.
is a negative. So this is telling us that, yes, does it have legs? Absolutely. But does the speculator really believe in this rally? Actually, they do not. And certainly the producer does not believe in this, because as I said before the commercial break, the producer in the Brent market on the global market has been selling into this, and so has the North American producer as well. So this is certainly a market where no one seems to have any sort of faith in it, but the market keeps on rising. So me personally, I got stopped out a long time ago, and I'm sitting on the sideline right now. I can't buy something I don't believe in, but I can't step in front of a runaway train at this point.
Right.
But I do expect to see a pullback before the year is out.
Any thoughts on how high it could go before that pullback takes place?
At this point, I do believe the market's trading purely on momentum, purely on psychology. So when you get markets like this, you start to aim for the psychological target. Right now, the New York Mercantile Exchange is above 45. WTI spot is above $45 a barrel. Your next psychological target is $50 a barrel. So I cannot, will not rule it out. That is certainly the big target that the market, I think, has on its back.
Now, if we get a big pullback, could it take us all the way back in the 20s? Or is the market kind of readjusting itself, higher highs and higher lows?
That's an excellent point. I do think we can get back in the 20s, but can we stay down there? No, we cannot. But certainly with, again, how much of this is not fundamentally underpinned in the market, certainly I could expect to see oil down back below $40 a barrel. My long-term, my yearly forecast that I gave out in December was oil between the $45, $55 range. So we're right there. But you don't stay there, so you have your highs, you have your lows, and then you average it out. So certainly when we look at, once we get through the summer and, again, look at the production, and again, at $45, $47, $48 a barrel, there are 9,000 DUCs, drills but uncompleted wells, in the United States. I have to imagine at these levels, and certainly with what the producer is selling, the WTI contracts, when a producer sells a contract, what they're doing is selling – protection on forward production. So there has been an increase in implied forward production. So at these levels, I would expect to see that this sharp, and we've seen a very sharp decline in production over the last 4 weeks, I would start to see that ebb over the by the end of the summer.
Now, I guess I have to bring in the magic word China.
Yes.
Because, you know, everybody was depending on China for just practically everything here in America. Every now and then, somebody will relate increasing demand back to China. Like, for instance, I think in December, they sold 2.7 or 9 million cars in December, and they're going to create a middle class roughly the size of the United States over the next 10 years. And becoming middle class in China means you get off the bicycle and you get into a car. What are your thoughts on the impact that China could have, and then eventually someday India would have on overall demand?
Right. I think China has been the biggest fallacy sold to the market over the past 10 years, simply because if you believe anything that the communist government is telling you, it is strictly propaganda. So what have we seen in China over the past year? Well, certainly their economy was built on an export economy. And that's why they continue to devalue the yuan, simply because they cannot compete when linked to the dollar. And this is when the dollar was considered bullish. They continue to devalue the currency to try and improve their export market. So a lot of the pullback in commodities, and keep in mind, I know we're here in Houston and everyone is focused on oil.
Right.
But it's been a pullback in every single commodity. Copper, aluminum, steel rebar, iron ore, lumber, all of the heavy industrial commodities, we've seen 40, 50, 60% declines in price. You only get that because of hard economic times. And a lot of this has been China exporting its deflation to the world. So at this point, what do we have now? We have a pullback in China. I don't believe China, and I think the market is finally saying, okay, maybe things aren't all rainbows, lollipops, and unicorns when it comes to China.
Right.
And then certainly Japan technically skirted a recession.
Right.
Which is, let's be honest, it's bogus. We're talking about decimal places here.
Right, yeah.
Clearly something is wrong with Japan. Clearly something is wrong with China. And clearly, bring it back home, clearly something is wrong with the U.S. economy.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So you think the U.S. economy is actually weaker than what our statistics show?
I tell you what, look at the we can get into this after the break, but look at the presidential election. That tells you all you need to know about the U.S. economy.
Oh, it's a very interesting election. Anyway, stay with us, folks. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Got with us today Mr. Stephen Schork. Mr. Schork is an analyst. Well, actually, he was an analyst with Glencore, but he has spent 4 years developing mathematical models. And let me tell you, I'm looking at this report. It's called the Schork Report, folks. And if you want to get a copy of it, or if you want to subscribe to it, I'm sorry, go to www.schork, that's S-C-H-O-R-K, report.com. And if you are in the energy industry, I don't know how you would exist without this report, because it's a pretty amazing.
And they're probably already familiar with it.
Yeah, and he produces this every single day. It's an amazing report. All right, so we're overpriced. We're having a short squeeze. China's not going to help us out. Is anything going to help out the energy market in the long run?
In the long run, yeah, I think World War III.
So. Oh, that's not very.
No, it's not.
Is there another alternative to that?
There isn't. No, economic growth.
You know, the bars are going to be full in this city later on today. Or probably early, too. So around lunchtime.
Well, look, we're going to go in. We'll finish this year, and we'll end an 11th straight year at sub 3% GDP. That has never happened in the history of the U.S. So when we look at other statistics, industrial production numbers just came out. The Federal Reserve has been tracking industrial production in the United States since 1920. Since 1920, there have been 18 recessions. The numbers that we are seeing on a year-on-year basis in industrial production have only ever occurred during 17 out of those 18 recessions. And it's not just industrial production. It is factory orders. It is the ratio of coincidental to lagging indicators. We are seeing numerous economic headlines that seem okay. But when we look at them on a year-on-year basis, we've only seen these types of numbers during recessions. So the answer here is the United States is either in recession now or somehow, some way, this time it's different. And I don't think this time is different. I think the U.S. economy has extreme problems, beginning with the extremely poor employment situation around the country.
So would you be on the side that thinks the Fed's going to raise rates in spite of that, just so they can have, in spite of this, just so they can have some bullets in the chamber if they need it?
I think that is certainly, I think Janet Yellen backed herself in the corner when she skipped the September rate rise.
Right.
So she had to do the December rate rise. I do not believe we'll see, as the more rosy indications have been, four rate rises, three more occurring this year. I do think she's trying to do that. But again, if we look at the numbers, and it all comes back to employment, guys, and the employment situation is, we could look at the pie in the sky and the make-believe headline numbers, but when we dig down in and look at the numbers, it's a really precarious situation in the United States.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it really is, and I think you're right. I think she did back herself in the corner when she skipped the September rate rise. Now, we had John Huffmeister on a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. former president of Shell, and interesting man, and he made a point. He said one of the things that is really not that apparent to what's going on now in the oil industry is the fact that oil revenue with these low prices has been so low in a lot of countries, like in Africa, like in mm-hmm. Venezuela, where the government sucks up a lot of that oil income for, you know, for other purposes to keep the country going.
Right.
And so they've been unable to take care of their equipment, take care of their pipelines.
That's a good point.
That he thought the wild card in this whole oil scenario might be that you're going to see some problems in the distribution networks that are not really apparent right now, but that he thinks will eventually rise up. Like Venezuela is like a total mess,
right.
And it's begun to impact their output. Is this a possibility?
It's an excellent point, and it certainly is a possibility. We see what's going on in Venezuela. We see the fruits of socialism, all you Bernie Sanders supporters
right.
out there.
Right.
So we see what is going on at this point where they have not invested into their own infrastructure. And certainly with those dollars being pulled back, it is. And that potential does exist, and especially in West Africa. And we have precedent for this. We saw this part of your catalyst for the extreme rally from 2000 to 2008 in oil prices was because we came out of 20 years in the 80s and 90s of $17, $18, $19 oil, which created this fallacy of peak oil, that we haven't discovered any new oil. Well, when oil's in the teens, we haven't discovered new oil because no one is looking for new oil.
Right.
So what happened when we came out of the dot-com recession in 2001? Okay. United States is firing on all cylinders. Europe is firing. Europe had to spend the 1990s incorporating all the sloth of the post-communist Eastern European countries. They come out stronger. Japan has in perpetual recession. Everyone was talking about Asia, Japan, Inc. in the 1980s. By 2000, the story was, the bubble was, it was China. So we had all of this demand for the first time in the history of the global hydrocarbon economy. We had demand at every single facet of the world. But we didn't have the ability to meet that supply. Again, there was an extreme shortage of steel to build rigs, to build pipelines, to build infrastructure. There was incentives now. You had incentivized workers who got burned in the oil sector here in Texas, up in Calgary in the 80s and 90s. You had to start paying premiums to attract this talent back. And that took 5, 6, 7 years to ramp that infrastructure back up. So a lot of it was demand, but a lot of the price rise in those 8 years was the inability of infrastructure to deliver, to get the oil out of the ground and to deliver it. And by, of course, 2008, the recession, and then the explosion in shale, it was a reverse. So Mr. Huffmeister, he's on to something absolutely there, because if it could happen here in Canada and the United States, it could certainly happen in Caracas and Nigeria forth.
You're right. All right, so before I get to a question on alternative fuels that you and Peggy talked about before the show, what is your prediction for oil now for the remainder of the year? Maybe as high as 55 if we get lucky, or
Right now, again, my thesis is that this is a spec-driven rally or a spec-short-driven rally.
Right.
But at this point, you have a situation where the market is trading on momentum. It's trading on psychology. So NYMEX WTI is already over. We've got as high as $46, $47 barrel. I think $50 at this point is a nice big round psychological number.
Okay, right.
I absolutely think that is attainable prior to the summer as refineries start to come out of turnaround season. They start buying more crude oil. Gasoline demand is going to be very strong, $2 gasoline.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
So you'll have that short-term momentum, I think, can still be maintained. But once again, I do think we get a pullback before we get that next pop
next
higher.
Next rally, okay. All right, now, I know you don't have much time, but and I know you don't have complete time to tell this. He told this fascinating story, folks, about the Tesla. Will be in the industry. Nothing for a while, or
well, I think it's having an absolute impact now, and I think this is what has. And everyone wants to seem to be focused on Saudi Arabia. Why are they cutting? Why are they cutting? Part of it is Iran. Part of it's geopolitics, but part of it is alternative fuels. So, Saudi Arabia can always compete with a producer in the Eagle Ford, a producer up in Bakken, a producer up in Calgary. They can always compete with that. What Saudi Arabia cannot compete with is Elon Musk. Now. Right now, these companies, these alternatives are not making money.
Right.
It's all government funded, but they are onto something. The genie is out of the bottle. So the best way to keep those prices high for alternative fuels is to keep the price for your commodity low. And certainly, I think this factors into Saudi Arabia's long-term plans.
I think you're probably right. Back to the future, here we come.
Fabulous.
Stephen Short, thank you so much
thank
for being
so
with us.
Thank you so
it's
much.
Been fascinating. Great to have you in the studio. We'll be back in just a few moments, folks.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.